Dr. Moss there in Washington, D.C., invented a series of 10 laws which demonstrated that the more juice you put across a mouse line, why, the less the mouse would go down the line. But he tabulated this. But he was unfortunate in tabulating it because I went around and I said, why are you doing this? And he said, well, this is the way you study such things. And I said, well, what are you studying? Well, we're studying rats. No. What's your goal? Why are you making these experiments? Oh, the behavior of rats. Behavior of life. Okay. Well, where's your experimental records here? Oh, they're here, they're fine. There's a rat named Oscar, and we put a female in the other cage, and we starved Oscar for 5 days, and finally, after we'd starved him for 5 days, he was no longer interested in the female. He was dead. So forth, and he gave me all these figures, and I said, well, where's your data? I was getting sort of impatient by this time. Where is your tabulated experimental setup? How many ohms of resistance? How many microamps? How many volts? For what period of time? For what age of rat? A whole new horizon had just opened for Mr. Moss. Dr. Moss. After that, I'm sure he had little columns over there he wrote ohms in. Of course, he didn't know an ohm from a gnome. But here we have this enormous amount of work going forward. Now, I'm not belittling these people. I'm just wiping them out. Of all of the wasted time which man is engaged in, this capped the deal. A subject which had no real goal. Now, somebody came along not too long ago and invented something called clinical psychology. And this was supposed to be a practice on people. But again, this is not a process, and it does not have a goal. It's let's treat people. Now, that is just a gesture. If an empty gesture, it's still a gesture in the direction of psychosomatic medicine. But there's nobody gotten there yet. Now, we've taken all available branches of existence, and we aren't there yet, except one, religion. 2,000 years ago, they had a few miracles. They didn't keep good case histories, and so we don't know quite how they were produced. Everybody's been trying since to try to change people's minds that fast. We don't even know that it was done swiftly, because, as I say, we have no case history. The experimental record was not maintained. If we knew how many minutes Christ held his hands over somebody's head, we might have some kind of a vague idea of how to go about it. Furthermore, did he hold the right hand or the left hand? And was he standing up or sitting down? Furthermore, how many ohms or amperes came out of his fingers? I mean, experimental record. Everybody goes around and says, well, now you just have faith in it. And I won't have any faith in an experimental record unless I can read it. I mean, I'm just instructed funny. I'm a perverse sort of a fellow in this respect. If everybody keeps telling me, now you've got to believe it, and you've got to have faith in it, and you've got to have faith in it, I'm apt to say about that time, in what? Well, it's. What? Well, in God. Where? I'll have faith in him. Where is he? And people look at me and say, I'm an atheist. I say, oh, no, you're the atheist. You think you have to produce evidence of God simply by bludgeoning people around until they believe in him. Well, I can make you believe in kangaroos. The kangaroos are following you up and down the street at all times of the day simply by hounding you and telling you to believe in the kangaroos. So it doesn't look to me like we've proven anything about God. It looks to me like we've proven that people can convince other people of things with duress. And this, again, is not an experimental record and has nothing whatsoever to do with psychosomatic medicine. Hasn't anything to do with human behavior or improving reaction time. In other words, everybody evidently has just been avoiding this terribly. Modern Times, Mary Baker Eddy came forward and produced the most significant work on this subject in an effort to establish, without any clinical record, a very brave attempt, by the way, trying to establish how did Christ bring about these healings. And she, however, did not ask with that divine doubt which every experimentalist must contain within himself. He must always be ready to doubt, not the other fellow's data, his own. If when a fellow is no longer willing to doubt, he stops investigating. He's already believes in something. Or he has the answer. And without any divine doubt, which is to say, let's go in and just pummel our way through we got a subject known as Christian Science. Well, an interesting subject. There's no doubt about Christian Science being an interesting subject because, as far as I know, it's the only attempt, I mean broad attempt, to unravel this problem of faith healing, which is to say, still the problem of healing. Whether it's faith healing or by antibiotic healing, there's still some healing. Somebody's trying to study this. But they're also studying, if they say healing, sickness. And that's still a modification. It's better if you just say, how do we make life better or more able or better functionally? Well, she studied this, and in the absence of a great deal of material, of course, had considerable difficulty. The biggest difficulty she had were, oddly enough, very, very specific. They were in the field of the mind and physics. And she walked in where Michael the Archangel himself wouldn't tread. And in the first prayer, get this, the Christian Science opens every service with, you have the most colossal error you ever saw, which would of necessity bring about an apathetic and unhealthy mental condition in its people. Perforce, it contains the words, all is infinite space, infinite mind. Now, running pre-clear, too, you will discover that as long as an individual believes a trap to have infinite boundaries, he believes he cannot escape it. He's finished. The second he finds out it has finite boundaries, the trap loses. In other words, if you thought you could never get out of Phoenix because Phoenix went on forever in all directions, you would certainly become convinced that you were just bogged down in Phoenix, wouldn't you? Would you? You never could get out of it because no matter how far you traveled in all directions, you still could not beat the barrier called space. You'd still find Phoenix. Therefore, you could never get out of Phoenix. Therefore, Phoenix was the all and everything of all and everything. See? Infinite space. That's the only thing that keeps anybody trapped in the meshed universe. They look around, and it apparently is so big that they claim it is infinite. But even your better mathematicians today are talking about the expanding universe. Say, look, if anything can expand, it is not yet infinite. If there's anything true, it's certainly this. The meshed universe has finite dimensions. Well, infinite space and infinite mind. So they went up on a rock, which they need never have gone up on. I suppose somebody merely wrote this in, or she wrote this in, just as a wonderful sweep of the hand, or a flourish of the pen, or a nice word. Utterly untrue, and calculated to booby trap any science, any effort. Maybe if they just left that out of Christian Science, why, Christian Science all by itself would have succeeded. If they hadn't hung everybody with infinite space and infinite mind. You see how that could be, how that could ruin all concerned? Let's tell somebody that he's in an infinite engram. He's got to keep on running it, and he'll never be finished with it, and he's in it. Boy, he'll start worshiping that engram, won't he? It won. Well, there's no reason to make the messed universe win. It is doing all right. No help. All right. And yet, where are we today in the field of reason? You might say the healing of reason. Where would you go to in a society? Let's take conditions as they existed in 1945. Where would John Doe have gone in the society to have had something happen to his reason, to better it? Let's say he'd been through a long and arduous war. Let's say he'd been 2 years maybe a prisoner of the enemy. He'd been starved. He was upset. He found out that every time he heard something drop in the middle of the night, or he heard an automobile horn at some far distance, he would be shattered. He'd lie there and shake. He'd find out that halfway through the night, he might awaken in a terribly nervous state, sweating, be unable to do anything but walk around the block several times, something like this, and so on. And having to, that would be all right if he didn't have anything else to do but sort of look at these symptoms. But he had to go on living, too. Now, what would that man do? Who would he turn to in the society? Who would he turn to? Would he turn to the medical doctor? The medical doctor turned to would say, well, I don't know, this B1 shots that we're giving you are not too bad. The fellow said, yes, I feel fine for an hour. He said, but what about the rest of the 23 hours? Well, have you ever been to church? I'm not being funny now. This was the reply of medical doctors in the services and outside the services to servicemen. This is funny, isn't it? That man's asking, what can we do about this? Therefore, he must know inherently that the condition is something that can have something done for it, just by the fact that he would seek help. Tells you that he is postulating that there is a remedy. And where would he go for this remedy? I say, the medical doctor. Yeah. B1, go to church. Why don't you go see somebody or other? The psychologist, the clinical psychologist who were on duty with the service or outside the service, when approached, were only evasive, very evasive. They were men full of great security, which they never produced. They would say to the individual, well, if we work for several years at this, we probably can do this as a psychoanalyst also. If we work at this for a year, I'll tell you whether or not you can do something about it. The serviceman would say, all right, we'll work at it for a year. He's willing. Well, all right. Now we spend the first hour with this psychoanalyst or clinical psychologist. We're trying to find out where he's going to get the money to pay for 4 one-hour periods per week. At $15 to $25 a period. That's $60 a week minimum. To go on for a year just to discover if something can be done for him. $60 a week? Well, I tell you, a fellow in that condition can't earn $60 a week. He's doing darn well if he can earn $30. You say, the government do something for these boys. Ha! The government didn't do anything for them. The government couldn't and told them it couldn't. Well, in the society or in the service, they received a dead-end answer from psychology. In the field of analysis, many doctors had taken up what they called narcosynthesis. If you knock them out deep enough and make them relive an experience, why, sometimes something happens. They neglect to tell you that 85 or 90% of the time they drive a guy completely off his rockers with narcosynthesis. One doctor told me, had the nerve to tell me in a meeting one time, you've said that something occurs which is not for the best in the field of narcosynthesis. Well, let me inform you that I've now been using it on servicemen for 2 years, and I have yet to note a derogatory or bad result. And I said, why, doctor, you need glasses. And his colleagues laughed a little bit. And I said, where are your clinical records? I'll be down tomorrow to see them. As though I were a police force or something. Oh, well, he said, these have all been shipped back to the government. I said, I'm sure we can get them back again. If you've never had a derogatory comment on the subject of narcosynthesis, I think that maybe we ought to review your cases or something. Oh, they're dispersed all over the place. Oh, you mean there's no way to check back against your word? We have to take your word that there's no harm in narcosynthesis. You don't have a single clinical record, then, that backs this up. Well, no, of course not. Why don't you sit down and we will get on with the lecture? Naturally, the fellow had known it time and time again. But he said, here is a gimmick, here is some way I can probe into the mind somehow or another and dramatize that attempted abortion which I've been carrying around all these years, And nobody's going to take this dramatization away from me. But it didn't do anything for the serviceman. What would you have done as a serviceman in 1945 in this society to receive any relief for nervousness, anxiety, or anything of the sort? The answer is nothing. There was no profession in 1945 which produced any relief or any betterment in the field of psychosomatic illness, nervousness, or the human mind. Now, that's an awfully flat, blunt statement, and I am not really given to making statements that can't be backed up. That's the truth. There was none in 1945. It's 1954 now. We've just reversed those numbers. And there is one. And that's the Scientologist. You can go to a Scientologist. And so you wake up sweating in the middle of the night, the Scientologist can do something about it. He doesn't have to work with this character for 189 hours to do something about a symptom or a manifestation like that. This is a big, broad symptom. The fellow says, my legs get so nervous, I get so tense, I can't see what I'm doing, I just about go mad. Scientologist has techniques which reduce this almost immediately. Interesting, isn't it? It looks like something must have happened here then in the last 25 years. There was nothing in 1945. There is something in 1954. Well, that's the difference. Let's look at the facts of the case, and let's not try to fight through anymore a bunch of fog and haze that is thrown up in front of people. What are the facts of the case? And the facts of the case are there was nobody functioning in the society to bring about surcease from sorrow. Nobody. A lot of people were talking about it and getting paid for it, but they weren't doing it. And now, in Scientology, we have people who are doing it. Now, this investigation covered the whole field of the mind. It started out, actually, not in the field of nuclear physics, but started out, really, in the field of Freudian analysis. I was fortunate enough to be trained to some degree by Commander Thompson, who had himself studied with Sigmund Freud. I was very young while this was going on. The first time I ran into Freudian analysis, I was 12 years old. It's very amusing. But in bagging around the world, I never had much time to go to school. I never went to high school. I took New York Regents examinations and went immediately into engineering school and college. There were many years in there when most boys are pinned down in classrooms when I wasn't. Well, I got quite interested when I was 12, mostly because I was interested in Commander Thompson. And the years went along, and I knew Thompson again here and there, and I read books that he sent me and so forth. But in the interim, I was in India, and I was struck with a horrible fact. India has all the data and none of the energy. The West has all the energy and none of the data. Freud was being sort of in the Oriental Europe, you might say, was more or less at a crossroads where the superstitions of the East would mingle with the force and efficiency of the West. He, for the first time, really decided to do something about this if he could, and that is what is remarkable about Freud. The decision to do something about it and the teaching that something could be done about it was not introduced by Scientology, not by a long way. It was introduced by Sigmund Freud. And if he only introduced that fact, no matter how funny some of his solutions may seem to us, remember that this was a new and startling fact in a world which was totally unsympathetic. He was a medical doctor. He gave up his entire medical career. He was thrown out of medicine, bodily, for daring to say that something could be done about the mind. Up to that time, the mind was something that belonged to the priests and the witches. And Freud said it doesn't have to belong to the priests and witches. It really should belong to the field of medicine. And medicine, 60 years after, still had refused to accept the responsibility for the mind. So obviously they don't want it. Freud tried to put into the field his own core of practitioners. Unfortunately, they would not even adhere to what he was doing. But if they simply carried forward the message, look, something could be done about the human mind, they were doing their bit, weren't they? They were paving the way. It was a long and arduous way, and it was arduously paved. But that was all that was accomplished in the first half of the 20th century. A number of people who kept saying, look, something can be done about the human mind. There are buried inhibitions and so forth, and man isn't acting quite right. And this material can be unburdened, and then a person will be free. They never unburdened it. Nobody ever got free. The usual number, 22% of people who get well on anything got well. And in spite of this tremendous discouragement and so forth, which must have been Freud's and which were his own people's discouragements, you see, they left him because he didn't have anything really to give them. Beyond that message, the fact remains that it was still a big open door in the society. That's the first time it happened in this cycle of progress here on Earth when somebody said, look, we can do something about human behavior. The social order can be altered. They were saying this without proof and without foundation, but they were saying it loud. And they were saying it very literarily. Enlisted on Freud's side are practically all of the writers of the first half of the 20th century. Sooner or later, all of them came around to using as characterization mechanisms Freud's stream of consciousness and other things. Freud has been tremendously widely publicized by writers and literature. Therefore, the message has gone forward into the Western world repeatedly over and over and driven home many times. The human mind is something that can be understood. It's possible to understand the human mind. The public has been left up in the air to this degree. Yes, they now realize that it's now possible for an expert with enough letters after his name and enough authority to do something about the mind. They've been totally sold on this fact. But there hasn't been anybody doing anything about the mind until now. Now, that's interesting, isn't it? Now, if you went ahead as a practitioner and damned Freud, and damned the doctors, and damned this, and caused a big war this way and that way, you would not be following forward into the inevitable consequence of this research and investigation. And that is the inheritance of all pioneering work which has been done in the direction of bettering the business of living. You would just divorce it. Don't forget that religion has bettered the business of living. Yes, it has. In a wild, cruel, barbaric atmosphere, religion has often brought about a civilizing, rational hand. Whatever else it's done, however many billion men it's killed in the name of the Prince of Peace, we're not interested in this. We do recognize the factor that religion has been a continuing promise that something better could happen. It's been there all these years. No reason to kick it in the teeth. If you do, you disconnect your communication line with the past. Your communication line with the past and your communication line with the public are identical. The public's in the past. It's total social culture. Everything it has is a built upon, derived, step-by-step procedure. If you were to revolt then and choose out for your randomity, religion, you certainly would be denying an awful lot of people help, wouldn't you? People know religion can help them. They would go to look for help along the cause and course of religion, wouldn't they? And where would religion drop them? It would drop them into the soup, of course. Well, it seems to be a very good joke that without fighting religion, people go along the line of religion to be helped, and they don't drop into the soup. They drop into a better state of beingness. And people go in along the line that there's something there called Freudian analysis, and it can help people. And it does remarkable things for people. There's no reason to take out Freudian analysis and use it for your randomity either, because you're blocking a new communication line. So there's that communication line. Let them come to you for help from Freudian analysis and get it. That's interesting. If they had come along for it 10 years ago, they would have dropped into the soup. Why let them fall in the soup? And in the field of psychology, they think somebody can do something for them and so forth. Well, there wouldn't be any reason to fight psychology. Psychology was trying to make a scientific study of something toward no goal, but people have an understanding that something like this was going along. Well, people that go into that direction for help include every student who ever enrolls in a psychology course. They go to the university and enroll in a psychology course normally because they or an immediate member of their family need help. And where do they get 4 years later? They drop into the soup, don't they? I think that something else ought to be taught there in the university, something that would give them that help, maybe in the first few months they were in school. That would be an interesting thing, wouldn't it? Well, why fight psychology? Everywhere we look, as far as medicine is concerned, medicine isn't even reaching along this line. And people sometimes ask a doctor something about this, but not very seriously. They have no faith or hope in the doctor. As far as psychosomatic medicine is concerned, if you don't believe that, go around and ask your neighbors. They say, we're not going to have any more operations or anything like that. We've already bitten that one. Now, that means that after 25 years of investigation, we sit here with some answers. They're demonstrably answers. They produce results. Fantastic, but it does. We produce results. But remember, we don't just sit here after 25 years of investigation. We're sitting here after some 4,500 years of modern civilization. Remember that. Now, man's been going along that line the whole distance, trying to get to some finite end where he could be better off, where he could be free. You're now in a position to make him better off and make him free. So you better take ownership and responsibility for the whole line. And you will then achieve your goals and the goals of Scientology. He wants to see a psychologist? Okay, you're a psychologist. He wants to see a psychoanalyst? Okay, you're a psychoanalyst. He wants to see a minister, you're the minister. And as far as the medical doctor's concerned, we will someday license those. As far as this goes, though, man today has been led to believe something that isn't true, that these fields can help him. Therefore, we had better play the very, very dirty trick on those who didn't want to help him by letting the gates open and letting those fields help him. The best way to do that is by being all fields related to psychosomatic medicine. We are the first answer. We're not the first communication line. Remember that. We're the first to have the answers. We're not the first to have the communication line. So we'll have to use past communication lines to apply our answers. In the whole field of Scientology, a study of it from beginning to end would reveal to you that there is really nothing new in Scientology. Really, nothing new. There's an enormous simplification, and the true facts that apply have been sorted out from those that didn't apply. You'll find any line of Scientology in almost any philosophy that was ever written. But there's a curve on them, the way they were written. They didn't work. Well, don't try to specialize in being new. Just try to specialize in being effective. And in your studies of this, the most effective works as we come along the line are, of course, Dianetics, Modern Science, and Mental Health, as the first public book. The earliest book, Scientology, a New Science, and Science of Survival, and issue 16G, and issue 24G of the Journal of Scientology, as well as the PABs, and then these innumerable lectures that are contained in lecture libraries. There is the information. We have that information. The most important parts of it are the writings which I have just named to you. You should be familiar with those. If you're familiar with those, you're actually familiar with 25 years of research and investigation. There isn't anything else or anything hidden or anything new or strange or peculiar that's going to hit you in the eye that isn't included in those works. It's there.